listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Kansas State Nation, what is going on, everybody? This is another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, take two of this podcast, meaning take two, meaning the second episode of the week, the Purple Project Podcast, where I am at Manhattan, Kansas, where I currently live. Of course, the Purple Project Podcast, all about what's going on for those of you new to this podcast. All about Kansas State athletics, Kansas State Wildcats, part of the community here in Manhattan, Kansas, obviously. Find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, folks. This is episode 93 of the podcast, and we're going to do this on the spot, folks. As I just did the introduction, folks, Alex calling in right now from, of course, my co-host for the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, episode 93. Alex, I just got this thing started. What's happening?
Oh, man, Eddie. Work is kicking my ass, but aside from that, I am good to go. I just logged off and logged on with you. So, I am here. I'm ready to talk all things K-State sports. I don't know what all you've talked about yet, but I will say, I did listen to Jerome Tang's press conference today. Uh-huh. Quite impressed. In K-State fans should be really excited for Jerome Tang. He's got some really good recruits that are coming in. He's got a really good coaching staff that he seems to be assembling that could lead to some really good recruits coming in. He's leaving a very good first impression. So, good things from Jerome Tang. And if you're ready to just dive into all things K-State?
Yes, and how funny timing works, right? I just got down here and got everything ready to go, recorded, actually started recording, so you did not miss a thing at all, my friend, so I'm glad you hopped on.
Perfect, the timing was impeccable.
Yep, something like that. Again, folks, you're new to the show, welcome on board of the Purple Project Podcast, another edition, special edition. This is episode 93 of the Triple P Weekly. And we got a treat for you guys here in just a bit, as Reggie Stubblefield, a.k.a. the Sauce Boss, will make his appearance on the podcast here shortly as we're recording this, a little bit earlier than our usual scheduled time because Reggie had some other things to take care of. So this actually works perfect for me as well, so definitely worked out as well. I sent the request to Reggie. Reggie sent out a tweet last week about he wanted to hop on another podcast. Well, I messaged him, slid in the DMs, and he responded just like that, like his quickness on the football field this year. So we have been in contact since then. So here shortly, he will be calling into the Purple Project Podcast, and we will dive on into him.
Eddie is sliding to everyone's DMs. Okay.
Hey, that's what you gotta do. That's what you gotta do. If it's email, if it's
what
not,
you gotta do.
Hey, if it's not email, then I'll try to find you on the old Twitter.
Oh, I know. I like it. Slide into those DMs, Eddie.
Yep.
Keep it up.
Yep, that's for sure. So already we had two good guests on here. Obviously, Keithan Valentine and Curtis Kelly last week. Those episodes are up now wherever you get your podcast. Definitely a must listen to both of those. We will have Keithan back on again at some point later on this spring to update, talk spring football, among other things as well. Yeah, Alex, I did not listen to the Jerome Tang while we wait on Reggie. I did not listen to the Tang press conference there, but from the looks of it, obviously, from what I heard some really good things about it. So, and obviously, Keithan brought this up to me, or really actually tweeted this out, that it was very, Gene Taylor knocked this hire out of the park. Now, Obviously, we'll see a few years down the road how the results look like from Jerome Tang and his coaching staff as he's currently putting his staff together. But he is the second African-American coach to coach basketball, the head coach at K-State, and the 25th overall head coach for the men's K-State basketball team.
He is exactly, and you know, like you mentioned, it's too early to tell. You know, because we haven't played a basketball game. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But you've got to be really impressed with, like I said, you hear the way he talks, you know the way he recruits, and now you see some of the coaches that he's bringing in one of Texas's top assistants to be an assistant here at K-State, one of the best recruiters in the state of Texas. I'm also bringing in a coach from Akron who's also a really, really good recruiter. Jerome Tang's a really good recruiter himself. And he's also obviously got the pedigree of, you know, being associate head coach of a team that went to 5 Sweet 16s, won a national championship, won multiple Big 12 titles, and was really waiting for the right job. And, you know, he's had other offers. I think that he has 5 reach-ins this last coaching cycle, I heard somewhere. And so, you know, there's been teams that have been interested in him. He's been waiting for the right opportunity, and K-State was the right one. And, you know, like I said, we'll have to get out on the court, we'll have to play the games. But when you listen to him talk, you know, he's got the mindset that's me fired up.
Alex, Alex, I gotta bring on our special guest. Let's see if I can hang on real quick here. Let's see. All right, K-State Nation, we got our special guest on the line, I believe, Reggie Stubblefield.
Hey, what up, man? How you doing?
Not too bad. You're on the Purple Project Podcast with me, Eddie Greer, and Alex Aiden. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to be here, man. Get to introduce some guys to me and to learn more about y'all, so, training us. That's fun.
Yep, let's have some fun indeed. The AKA the Sauce Boss has arrived on the Purple Project Podcast, episode 93. Reggie, obviously, we'll get into all the football talk momentarily. We'll talk basketball first. Did you do a bracket?
No, I actually didn't do a bracket this year. I should have.
See,
I don't think Eddie did one either. Eddie, you didn't do one, did you?
No, I told you, Alex, on Tuesday's episode, I did not do a bracket either. So
that's the only one who didn't do a bracket, apparently.
Yeah, man, I really should have did a bracket because some of the teams that got upset, some teams who lost, some teams who've been winning. I kind of had it predicted as I've been watching the game, so lost that on some money.
Reggie Stubblefield had St. Peter's in Sweet 16. He forgot to put it on the bracket, but he didn't have to do that.
Nah, they didn't have St. Peter's. I'm not going to lie about that one.
Yeah, nobody didn't have St. Peter's in going to Sweet 16. Otherwise, they're lying. Anyways, hey, Reggie, thanks for hopping on board. Obviously, you're getting ready. You're currently preparing for the NFL draft, obviously. Before we get on into that, you told me last week you're back in Texas, is that correct?
Yes, right now.
All right. So how's I'll just jump in straight into it. So how's been the preparation, getting yourself ready to go for the NFL draft since you declared a while back ago after the season was over, after the Texas Bowl?
Yeah, so it kind of started off slow because I had to go into surgery and get some things done. So I kind of started off my combine trip, my prep and all that, a little bit later than most guys would. And I only had like a month to train for my pro day. But from there, it went really well, man. I hit the ground running, do what I do best, grind, work hard. And actually was out in Fort Myers, Florida, training with a company, a facility by the name of X3. And, man, those guys did me well, man. They helped me. They got me ready for pro day. And pro day came around. I killed it at my pro day. And then as of now, I'm just transitioning to the training camp phase, getting ready for the, you know, the mini camps, rookie OTAs, you know, that situation that comes with football. So just right now, it's another grind, another hard working stage, consistently making sure I'm always in the gym and
always on the field, you know, doing some type of technical work, footwork stuff, learning the game, studying, and just, you know, still having these interviews with teams and private workouts and all that. So it's a busy process right now, but, you know, it's something that I'm enjoying and having fun with.
Talk a little bit too, you know, about that process, because, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to go through that NFL process and you know, see so many players that have to prepare for the draft late in April. It really seems, from afar at least, like it just a complete grind. You know, your season doesn't end. You know, once that season ends, you flip the switch and you know, you go into it and you mentioned that, you know, you kind of got off to a little bit of a slow start, but you had to take care of some things there in surgery. But number one, what exactly is that day-to-day grind like preparing for the NFL draft? And also, do you think it was a disadvantage at all that you kind of got a little bit of a slow start because of those procedures done?
I mean, to answer the first question, just to go into detail, like a day for me, I'm kind of like a 6 a.m. to like a 10 p.m. type guy. So like from 6 to 8, I get like a first. I wake up, you know, get some stretching in, do some yoga, and then I hit breakfast. And then from breakfast, I hit my first little strength training. I do some, you know, rehab stuff, some small maintenance stuff on my body in the gym. Then from there, I have another little, like, pre-workout meal. So that's probably around from, like, 8 to 9 eating. And then from 9 a.m. to about maybe 1 p.m., this is where I go into my transition of football. So I'm, you know, on the field doing some skill work, position work, or technical sound stuff, or I'm in the film room. And then, like, from 1 p.m. to 2, lunch. And then from there, I have another football training session. You know, steady grinding. Same old thing, you know, get some more footwork stuff in. Do a little bit of recovery just to maintain my body, get back right. And then I go from there, I have another meal. I go to physical therapy, get some maintenance and stuff like that. Then I have dinner. And then right after dinner, I actually have my weightlifting session, which is kind of strange to some people, but I mean, that's my type of schedule. It works best for me. I have my weight training session at night, and then have my post-night meal, and then that's my day. So it's 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. It's just ongoing every time. So
it's a full-time job. I mean, that is legitimately a full-time job that you have preparing for that draft.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, starting off late with the surgery and all that, it's kind of disadvantage though. I mean, it's just a situation that I was dealt, the hand I was dealt. So, I mean, I just take it for what it is, you know, and at the end of the day, I know I can't dwell on that or just sit back on that, worry about that. I mean, I got to worry about what's next. So, it's not a disadvantage at all. I mean, some people say it's a surge. I mean, wish I had more time. But, I mean, I'm good. I'm 100% right now. So I'm ready to go. I'm just looking ahead at what's more, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that is quite the grind, definitely. Have you had, before we go back to your journey to K-State, have you had any interaction? I know a couple of your former teammates are also preparing for the NFL draft as well. Julius Brents, your fellow backfield teammate there, and then, of course, Skylar Thompson. Have you been keeping in touch with those guys?
Yeah, so Julius is actually not coming out this year. He's actually staying for another year.
Okay.
He's that special of a talent. But yeah, I actually trained with about 5 of my guys that came out this year. Russ East, that was a guy that a lot of people see us at the back end. Trained with him down in Florida. I talk to him every day, man. That's like one of my best friends. So we're super close.
Okay.
He had a great nose tackle with him. Timmy Horn, he was down there in Florida training with me. And then 2 offensive linemen, Ben Adley and Josh Reeves. And then the rest of the guys, I mean, we're always staying in contact, you know, giving each other tips, you know, making sure we're good, you know, giving guys just, you know, just talking. I mean, we're a family at K-State. Like, it's really a brotherhood there. So, I mean, we're always chopping it up and just, you know, like, the guys always hit me up. They all hit me up yesterday. They congratulated me and telling me how they felt about my highlight film that just got posted. So
yeah, I saw some of that. Yeah, today actually. Yeah, I didn't see all of it, but I got to see some of it that you posted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a family, man. It's a brotherhood. We always talking, chopping it up, and just, you know, staying in contact. And that's what you should do. That's what a program should, Brian. That's what it should be all about. So it's a relationship, man. Yeah, it won't end.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, that's the K-State way, right? The family. You keep each other.
Family.
Keep in touch with your brothers, other friends, or family and friends, and that's what it's all about. Yeah. So winding back, you've had quite the journey. The K-State. For those of our listeners that don't know, kind of take us back a little bit. How did you get the K-State, and why did you come to K-State?
Yeah, so I mean, I basically got to K-State because, I mean, with the whole COVID year and everything that was going on, I mean, NCAA allowed guys to have that one free transfer portal, you know, to go ahead and go where you wanted to go. I mean, I was kind of going to hit the portal anyway because I was a graduate guy, and that was the only way you could move up without having to sit out a year. And, I mean, it was my last year, graduated, so, you know, all the scouts used to always have the question mark on me because I played against big competition. So, I mean, it was a great opportunity for me to go ahead and place my skills on a big level. And I got to K-State, man, because they gave me that call, they gave me that offer. It was a connection from there. Meeting with Coach Kleiman, Coach Malone, Coach Flanderman, I tell people all the time, man, it was a special connection. It was a special bond because they come from where I come from. They understood me. I understood them, man. They love me and I love them, man, and it was real. So, I mean, it was a perfect fit. I couldn't really turn that down, man. That's what I wanted. Just everything I wanted in the program, everything I wanted in the coaching staff, teammates, and just an atmosphere. Something I know I needed too. It was simple, man. That K-State, it was an easy choice, and that's why they came in so fast and I committed so fast, and I was on the highway the next couple of days shooting down there. So,
you know, Reggie, there's so many things too that you want to break down about your college experience because it was such a unique one at K-State, but I think what you touched on is something that was really evident to just fans that were local fans that were afar, wherever they were, with what you mentioned that it was a perfect fit. It was a perfect fit for you, and the love that you have for the coaching staff, the love that you have for the Vegas University, and then the love that the fans became a fan favorite in 1 year. You were a fourth-year starter out there. Yeah. You'd only been there 1 year. And I saw this on Twitter, and I think that was what I was pretty sure you commented on it, but there was like a, you know, some sort of Twitter polls going off, like, you know, like, our favorite K-State players of all time, and like, you're not there. Like, I think you're one of those prime recruiter at the moment. It's amazing the way that you captivate the fans, and the fans are able to captivate you. Just talk kind of about that connection that you were able to build with the K-State fan base community.
Yeah, the connection is actually bigger and a lot better once you really break it down and really think about it, because it wasn't a year. I kind of got to always express that to people too, because as a football player coming in, you have that winter workouts, you have spring ball, you have summer weight training, all that. I didn't get to have that opportunity. I was really at K-State for only 3-4 months, honestly. Mm. You know, I got here all camp, basically. So, I mean, that connection and that bond and all that, it grew strong because it worked on both hands. You know what I mean? I gave K-State my all, they gave me their all. So, it's easy when you're able to do that, you do it the right way. You know what I mean? You go out there, play with passion, you know, you do everything that you're supposed to do as a student athlete. I mean, those things are going to come out. I mean, it's just the fruits of my labor. Like, it's just seed that I planted. You know what I mean? And it was just so, I mean, it's people, I see a lot of people, you know, kind of get so worked up about it and all that. And it's surprising. I mean, credit to me. I mean, I'm proud of myself able to transition into that Power 5 level and do what I did. But
yeah,
it's not hard when you give it your all. You know what I mean? Like, people are truly going to respect it when they see it, you know? So people got to actually see it, you know? They didn't just see the social media talk or whatever. It was even none of that before. You know, it was just the fact that I went out there, I grinded, and I backed up everything that, you know, any doubters or anybody that was rooting for me said. So, yeah, man, it's that connection, that bond is just special because, I mean, it's the truth, you know? Like, you got what you saw, you see what you saw, you know, you see what you heard. And I don't really know no other way how to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Perfect sense. And Eddie, I'll throw it back to you in a second, but it's cause, just because it's fresh in my mind, the press conference with the drum. He's the new basketball coach today. He said practically the same thing you just said, Reggie, about working hard. And you know, especially, yeah, there's nothing special about me. Like, I work hard, and that's got to be where I am. And, you know, if you work harder, then people are going to protect you, and you're going to be able to do your business. That's kind of the case. And, you know, you kind of went head down to the K-State way, and everyone just loved it and praised it. It was really, really cool to see.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what I definitely wanted to do, but that's who I am, too. You know, every day I was out there, you know, grinding extra hard, putting in extra work, you know, staying overtime with my coaches in the film, or catching 1,000 jugs after practice. Like, I knew I had came from Fairview where I had just played the whole season, too. People forget sometimes that I played 2 seasons in 1 year, you know, so I had to go out there and put in all the work, you know what I mean, to earn my respect the right way. You know, earn my opportunity, you know, to play the game. So, yeah, man, it's kind of what you just got to do, though, if you want it that bad. So,
Yeah. Yeah, if you want something bad, you got to work hard for it. That goes for any sport. This is the Purple Project Podcast Weekly. Reggie Stubblefield here joining us on the podcast this evening as we're recording this, 7:15 Central Time. My time anyways, and Reggie's time for that matter. So Reggie, you mentioned Chris Kleiman, Coach Van Malone, and the defensive coordinator, Joe Klineman. What is it like playing on Joe Klineman's defense this year? You guys instituted a new defensive formation, a 3-3-5. What was it like playing for Joe, for the defensive corner, Coach Joe?
Man, it's really fun. It's exciting, and it's really unbelievable, man. Because of the trust factor, like I see the amount of hard work that Joe Klineman puts on us, and the work that he puts in to break down opponent's film, and the thing that he does to just prepares for the game. So, you know, when he's calling a play like that, like, you have that trust, you have that belief in him, like, you know this play is going to work, you know what I mean? Like, you know it's going to hit because of the work that we all put in together, though, as a unit. Like, he was also my position coach now, too. So, me and him working hand-in-hand, like, it was a trust factor to where I would tell Coach, like, hey, you know, I see something, you know what I mean? Like, Coach, let me do it. He gives me the go light. He gives me the green light. Like, hey, Rich, I know. Like, go ahead. So, you know, it's fun, man. It's exciting because that 3-3-5 is still an evolving defense around college football and just the football game in general. Where we have a safety look. It's not just a 3-3-5 where you still have a 2-high safety look. It's 3 safeties back there. So, excited, man. And the way he utilized me, it was exciting too because you can see me off the edge. You can see me in the box at nickel. Even as free safety sometimes, or even at the middle safety. So, you know, they use me around. We use a lot of different packages too. I could play corner. And it was just fun and exciting, man, because we gave teams fits because you have to play conservative in that defense because it defeats all explosive players. You know, we try to limit teams and, you know, keeping it short and simple. And, you know, it was just fun because we ended up showing that we had one of the best defenses in Big 12, and they actually showed by our numbers. So, the defense works, man. Joe Klineman, he's a great guy. He's a great dude to be around. He works his ass off. He works super, super hard. So, gonna ask for more from him.
And you mentioned the defense, right? Yeah, and quick question. I couldn't hear you.
I probably
put my thumb right over here. I apologize for that.
Let me try. Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. So, with the defense, quick question about the Quick question about the defense, Reggie. We saw you guys start out really strong, right, at the beginning of the season. Just playing really, really good football. And then we saw you guys finish the season really strong defensively as well. And then it's in the middle, there was kind of a little bit of a, I'm not going to call it a lull, but there was a point where some teams were putting up some points on you guys, and it seemed like the defense might have been in a little bit of a funk. And then you guys went into that Texas Tech game. And Felix had that amazing play in the end zone that really seemed to turn that game around in Lubbock. You guys get the win, and the defense, it seems like, just got rolling from that. It's like it flipped a switch. Can you talk about, number one, kind of how you guys got out of that funk and really the role of that game in Lubbock played to kind of get that season back on track?
Yeah, I tell people all the time this story because, I mean, football is deeper, and there's so much that goes on in the season that a lot of people don't really know about looking from the outside. And what was so funny about that game is a lot of teams were starting to come out in their heavy personnel, so they was getting us out of our regular base 3-5 look, so we would have to go to a more heavy package. So some of our players wouldn't be subbed in, like me or a couple other guys. And, you know, teams came out and they scored kind of fast on us in these heavy packages. Like, you really look at the games, they're coming out there with 2 tight ends, 3 tight ends, even in the Iowa State game. So I remember just being on the sideline beginning of those games, like, heated, like, super, super heated. Like, y'all, like, come on, man, Tech, like, for real, like, I'm looking at
you. Yeah. Yep.
So I finally get in. I looked at Coach, like I said, Coach, man, me and Clemmie, we have a connection. Like, he looked at me, I looked at him, like, I'm finna get in this game, and I'm not coming out. So, man, there, like, you could just see the whole momentum, you could see the whole aspect of that game change. Like, I really tell people all the time, like, go watch that full game clip, and you're gonna see everything, like, everything I'm telling you right now, man. Yeah, from Felix making that play, like, right before the snap, me and Felix talking, like, hey, Felix, you make people at that B game, right? He's like, yeah, he shoots it. Crazy, like, I'm just like, me and Felix talk about that every time we see each other, like, we just say B-gap, it's so funny, but, yeah, we have to take over, but at the end of the day, too, it was still a team win, like, Skyler, Deuce Vaughn, Kate Warner, Tyrone Howell, like, Malik, they all come in and step up their game, too, on the offensive side, man, Tosh Zidner, man, he's booting punts, man, he's putting us in great field position, like, it was a team, it was a real, real team win, but from there, like, we figured out our holes in the defense. Those first 3 conference losses, we had guys in the wrong position. I mean, I was just coming off an injury, so I missed the Oklahoma State game, and I was slowly put into the rotation, the Oklahoma game, the Iowa State game. I was playing with a cast. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I do remember that, yeah.
I don't. I was there for the OU game. I don't remember that.
big old cast there.
Yep, a lot of people don't remember these things, and these things, I mean, it was some close games that we lost, but I truly feel we had everybody in our rotation that we had at the end of the year, or even at the beginning, because of a few injuries and hiccups, because Skyler went down too, that Oklahoma State game, he didn't play.
Yep,
so,
yep.
I truly feel like we would have been a playoff contending team this year, but I mean, that was just the situation, the hand that we was dealt, but once we figured out, you know, the type of guys that we needed in certain positions, in certain roles, I mean, we just did what we did at the beginning of the year and just took over and took off. Like, it wasn't really. That's just what we, man. We just need to find that gel that makes it the right guys being on the field. We did that, couldn't nobody handle us, man. We, that team, every great team will run for their money. So.
Yeah.
I think they got a team to do it. I think they got a team to do it again here this upcoming year.
Yeah, I mean, yep. Yeah, same thing. Yeah, I think they're going to have a team that can go out and compete and give other the Big 12 points a run for the money. Yeah, I believe that as well. Yeah, we've been talking about that. Yep.
Yeah, I've been talking about the guys too. I keep in contact with them all the time, and I'm always checking in, making sure they're doing well, you know, seeing where the mental's at, seeing how's everybody looking. They most definitely got the team, man. They got the program for it. Coach Kleiman, his staff, all the players that he's bringing in, man. It's an unbelievable culture. Like, I wish any fan could just have a week to just experience everything day in, day out. Like, it's a grind. You know, you can work super, super hard at K-State, but the type of love support that you get from that team, man, all those guys got to do is continue to believe, play with confidence, and just go out there and ball. And I think they got the team to really do it this year. So, I mean, we had the team last year. Like I said, a couple hiccups, a couple injuries and stuff like that, close games, but they're good this year. I truly believe so.
like it.
The Purple Project Podcast Weekly, episode 93, with Reggie Stubblefield, who played in that secondary for K-State and was made a huge impact in his one only season here at K-State. Yeah, so going back, before I talk further about the this past year's schedule, the home games. Obviously, Bill Snyder Family Stadium, the ultimate college experience, the best fans in the Big 12. What was your experience this past year, playing in front of all that purple at home?
Yeah, it was a great experience. Very loud, very energetic. And I think those fans, I appreciate them so much too, because they actually pay attention. You know, some fans just come for the game, you know, and just, you know, I went to a football game, that was it. Those fans are actually there to really support, do what they can do, and they feel like, so I feel like sometimes they feel like they playing, like, yeah, you know what I mean? They want it so bad. That's one thing I love about the state of Kansas and just Kansas State football in general. Like, people really support and want the best for their sports teams. So it was amazing, man. Amazing opportunity. Like, you catch me running out the front of the tunnel every time because I was just so excited. So real, so excited, so like happy, so blessed to be playing in front of that many people. So it was unbelievable, man.
Yeah, I was there. I was part of that Purple Nation out there at Bill Snyder this year for majority of the games. I remember the OU game that I think prior to last year, I think obviously it was the COVID year and all that. But going back to that game particularly, just you can feel the energy around that game. Just even I was hyped about it. So you just feel the intensity. You see all your fellow men and women in purple, and then you have the contingent of the red of OU. It just felt like a big game, and it lived up to it.
Yeah, it most definitely did. Like I said, man, a couple of defensive rotations. If we have the right guys in at the right time, we know we go back and we win that game. But yeah, it's just Skyler, man. He played his butt off. Like, he played a great game. He always plays great against OU. He's a great quarterback. But yeah, man, defense, we laid it up that game. That was one of those conflict games that we talked about early middle of the season that, you know, we let down. We gave up some points. But man, that game right there, that was an unbelievable experience. Like, seeing Skyler come back from injury and mm-hmm. people that he was going to play or not, and they announced his name on the speakers, it was crazy. I'm like, okay, let's go. It's like let's go. You know, I'm about to play one. I don't care. Like, it's unbelievable, man, because everybody's engaged, everybody interacts, and that's what makes college football special, but that's what makes K-State football special, too, because you don't get that in a lot of places.
Skyler is not like that leader. Like, you're right. He's not like that. The mama went.
Alex, you're doing it again. You're cutting out.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. My wife might be dumb right now. I don't know what else to say. I do have this question for you, though, Reggie, if I don't cut out this. In the bowl game against LSU, what was that experience like? I saw K-State, you guys and LSU were, you know, exchanging some dinner plans before the game. but once that proceeded, what was that game like? It was your last game with K-State. It was a game that you guys were really motivated for, and a game where you guys just played really well beginning to end there and just dominated LSU. What was that game like for you?
For me, as a player, it was another statement game. That's how I feel. I mean, I treat every game the same. But, yeah, it was a big statement game, not only because I was able to go back to the city of Houston and play in front of so many friends, family, former teammates that I played with at Prairie View. Another opportunity to play in the NFL stadium on national TV, you know, basically almost one of the last bowl games of the year. So just to show people and represent like who we are as K-State,
as a defense, as a team, special teams unit. You know, I want to go out there and let everybody know, like, I don't care what LSU got going on, but they decided to put their helmets on their shoulder, and so we finna do them bad. So that was my thing, like, treat every game the same, go out there and try to kill our opponents. And that's what we did. That's what was on our mind as a team. So that's how we attack, though. That's how we work. That's how we prepare ourselves, and that's what we did.
Yeah, now I'll jump in here real quick, Alex, for a second, before I bring it back to you. Yeah, and there was a lot of talk even after the game that, you know, LSU is trying to make excuses and all that. They didn't have their best players because they opted out and they prepared for the draft and all that. But you guys really, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You guys really took it to a really still. I mean, they got the athletes, but still, you guys made a statement on the field. Whether they had their star players or not, you still went out and took care of business. And it's funny because the season started in Texas and it ended in Texas. So you guys beat Stanford first game of the year. You take care of them 24-7, and then you end the year just blasting LSU 42-20. So you guys definitely hit your business, and on the defensive side of the ball, you guys really, they had their backups and whatnot, whatever, but you guys really shut them down.
Mm-hmm. That's on their program. I mean, credit to the guys who were able to opt out and still get drafted and all that, but, I mean, we got guys like that too. I mean, Skyler could have opted out, I could have opted out, some of the other guys, but, I mean, we're a family, like I said in the beginning of this interview. Like, we're going to always want to play together, we're going to always want to go out there and, you know, play football and win a game. Like, we're not caught up in all that extra stuff. Like, that's why you see some of the guys at our pro day, we're going to compete in every event, we're going to do everything, because that's just how we're wired. Like, we're tough, we're hard-nosed. So, I mean, that's on LSU. Like, they don't want to have some of the players out that way. Okay, that's on y'all. Now your backups got to get it. You know, I mean, they still decided to show up and play. You know, should have faked COVID or something like that. But it's the truth, though. Like,
yeah.
Clearly, they could have. A lot of teams work.
They could have bowed out. Yep, could have bowed out. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so, I'm going to keep it real. I'm going to tell people the truth all the time. Like, it's just what we do. We want to go out there and send a statement because it was another game. It's another opportunity to close on a great season that we had, historic season, especially considering the fact that it was another K-State team to make it to a bowl game and win it, and just the amount of, you know, the opportunities that we had. So that's just how we was.
Definitely. Now, going off that, you talked a little bit about your connection with Joe Klatterman. You also talked a little bit about Chris Klieman. I was hoping you could elaborate on you and Coach Kleiman's connection, because that really did seem like a special one. And I think that you just could see it throughout the year. Just love that you two had for each other, the respect that you two had for each other. So what was it like to play for Coach Kleiman? You've already mentioned that, but could you elaborate a little bit on what it was like to play for him and your guys' relationship and the role he's really played in your football life and even personally?
Yeah, just football life, I mean, it's a respect factor because he treats all his players the same because he wants the best for you as a football player, as a man, and just as a person in general. Like, Coach Kleiman didn't give nobody on the team no special privileges, no showing extra love, none of that. Like, he worked me hard as hell. Like, excuse my language, but
no, you get it.
that's who he is, though. Like, he comes from hard work. He knows how to win championship. He knows what it takes. He's not gonna let him off the gas. Like, if you're not doing something right, you know what I mean? You either gotta get it right or you're gonna get left. No, and that's how you should be as a coach. That's what it takes. So, I mean, he's a very hard-working guy. He's going to be on you hard, but he does it all out of love. You see that in some of his interviews when he gets emotional and all that because he actually really cares. He loves K-State. He wants to bring K-State a championship so bad. He talks about it all the time. So, you know, football, you know, he's a true coach. Like, he's everything that you want in the coach. And then just personal as a man, I mean, he teaches us how to handle life. You know, he's dealing with a lot of things that I think a lot of people on the outside don't understand. But, I mean, he handles it the right way. He comes to work and shows up every day and he does his job. You know, he's grinding super hard. You know, he has some tough decisions to make this year. And just, I mean, he's a guy that you got to have respect for. So, he doesn't do nothing. Like, he doesn't cheat his way through. Like, he does things the right way. And it's like, that's why I say, it goes back to the whole K-State program. Like, how can you not have respect for people? How can you not go out there and play hard, play with passion, when you got people doing it the right way? So, I mean, that's just our relationship. Like, our relationship is tight. Like, today, he liked my Instagram. He liked my highlight video or whatever. I said, thank you, coach. It's crazy, we asked that question, because I just texted him today. He texted. And I was like, appreciate you, coach. Thank you for everything. I always tell him that, let him know. And he just simply says, love you, Rich. Like, I'm saying back. I said the same thing back. Love you too, coach. Like, that's just the type of relationship we got, man. He looks out for his players. He's going to keep in contact. Man, he's a good coach. A really, really good coach.
Reggie.
That's special.
Yeah, that is special. Kind of like we've seen from, Coach Klimas' relationship with Skylar, as well. So definitely, it's something that you'll never forget, that player coach relationship for sure. And you guys, Reggie, you and Coach Klimas definitely have that special. That you guys got that something going, that for sure.
most definitely, man. Because I remember walking out of my senior night and seeing what he told me in my ear about, you know, how he appreciated me so much because I helped change the culture. You know, help bring that, you know, that tenacity, you know, that consistency, that leadership, you know, that type of confidence that we have to play with to play in this game. And, I mean, you've seen that it showed in our season. Like, last year, I think them guys won, four games, almost three, I don't know. And this year, you know, we had a great opportunity to be in the Big 12 championship.
Mm-hmm.
So, it just goes to show, simple.
Yep. So, kind of going on to the practice field. Obviously, we got one of the big, better running backs in Big 12, Deuce Vaughn. what was it like going up against Deuce Vaughn in practice every day?
Talent. Special on the field, off the field. I give Deuce his flowers every day I see him, man. He's special. He's one of a kind. And going against him in practice, I tell him all the time, like, I play against running backs like him because I come from a conference where our backs is pretty much undersized, pretty small. But, I mean, he's more dynamic and special because not only is he super, super athletic for his size, he's super, super smart, and he has the dynamic of catching out the backfield and running routes that most running backs don't have. And he's super, super quick and twitchy, you know. And he's a tough dude to handle, but me and Deuce, we compete hard. Like, I think he got me on one play one time this year, but you know, Deuce know I'm coming every time, I'm bringing it. So he's just special, man. He's a leader. He's a great person. Like, his family, man, I can't give him enough credit too. I haven't even met them, but I just know, like, they raised a great dude. They raised a great kid. Like, Deuce, he already going down in history, but I'll be telling y'all, right, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the Heisman. Or would he? Like, I'm telling him, go win the Heisman, you know? Like, go get it, because why not you? Like, you already put in the work. I see what you can do. And stay consistent and do what you do. Deuce is special, though, man. I can say 1,000 things about Deuce, and I don't even know what I can really say negative. So, like, you really have to search and find things to say something negative about him. Yeah. That just goes like a person that he is. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's the truth. Like, what can you really say? I mean, he does everything right. So, that's one of a kind.
But places, everybody who knows Deuce and who's close to Deuce says what you just said, too, to talk about. So, he's not a deal. He could win a Heisman, and he's even better off the field than that.
He's a better person off the field than he is on the field. And we know how good he is on the field. And I've said this before. He's stuff from a different clock. He faces some different stuff. Like, he's got that. He's got something. Something that just that's just different, and it just makes him special. I'm sure that you all see that out there.
He's from Texas. No, I'm just playing.
Yeah, that's it, right? It's different. It's different. It's different when it's from Texas.
Nah, man, he's just special, man. It's hard to find it in dudes like that, especially when he's consistent. When he's consistent with how he plays, that's what I'm so proud of too, because. At a running back, even at the running back position, it's hard to do that, man. It is. And he just consistently goes out every day and he makes plays, and that's what he does. So, yeah.
He also gets the attention of the casual sports fan because late in the season, my brother, who is a huge Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs fan, because we're both Chiefs fans, but he's not as big of a K-State fan. He's not as big of a K-State fan, but at the end of the season, he brought up, he's like, "Oh, you guys got a pretty good running back, don't you?" And I'm like, "Okay, Deuce is officially hitting the casual sports fans. I like this. That just speaks to Deuce's character. But Reggie, mentioning this team and last year, just what's a memory? What is a lasting memory that you're going to carry? Is there maybe a particular story of something that happened in a practice or a game, or maybe it's just a moment? At K-State, is there anything in particular that you're going to remember, any sort of lasting memory?
I think one of the biggest memories, because, man, there's so many, like, even from my transition there, from the respect that those guys gave me from day one to the end, I mean, the opportunity to suit up every day and go out there and battle with them. But I think one of the really, really special moments, because I always had the leadership quality. It was when we was playing pretty bad against Southern Illinois. And at this time in the season, I'm still kind of like, everybody's still kind of figuring me out. You know, even though I'm still at the full fall camp, I actually started off at corner and they put me in at nickel like a week before the Stanford game. So, you know, people are still kind of like figuring me out, coach regard to, you know. And we were down, I don't know if we're down or the game's tied, maybe we're up by a couple points against Southern Illinois. And we're all in the locker room, and coach is about to speak, and I tell coach, you know, hold on, you know, let me speak to the guys. And I get heartfelt message, like, very, very emotional, very, like, you know, loud, you know, kind of just passionate, you know, telling the guys the truth about how we are. And I just let them know, like, this isn't what we came for. Like, this isn't what we worked hard for. Like, this isn't what we did all the miles of fall camp for. You know, this is not about to be that same K-State team from last year. And just shit on the guys' faces, like, that respect, that, like, that trust, and that, like, that want to, like, okay, he's for real. Like, we got somebody, you know, that's really, like, all in with us. Like, from there, it was just, like, a connection that was, like, crazy. Like, you could just tell, like, we was all in. So, I think that's one of the biggest moments, man. A lot of people don't, like I say, a lot of people don't know what goes on inside of a locker room or around the out.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things, like, I mean, anybody tell you that story, though, so it's crazy. Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things as I reflect on the season.
Yeah, you're still cutting out, Alex, so I'm going to jump in here. Yeah, that was the game, I remember that game. Because I was at that game also, the Southern Illinois game, where Southern Illinois was rolling in the first half, and that was the same game that Skyler went down in that first half there, and you can hear the crowd, absolute silence in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. You didn't hear a peep there, and obviously we saw... Well, later, when I went back to rewatch highlights, obviously Chris Kleiman, knee down, praying with Skyler there. That was a powerful moment there as well. That was, Southern Illinois was rolling at the time there, and I believe it was tied. I can't remember exactly, but apparently you guys did something right because they didn't score again in the game. So K-State needed someone like you to pep them up a little bit. And not only that, obviously, I'll throw this in there, Reggie. Daniel Green, he's really improved year to year as a leader as well. What are your impressions of Daniel Green?
He's a monster. He's a dog. He's serious about his work, man. He always continues to get better. It is special. I mean, it's truthful, exactly what you said, year in, year out. You know, I watched the tapes from the previous years, and it just predicted, you know, how he's operating now, how he carries himself. He's one of the best linebackers, to me, in the nation, and, you know, especially in this next upcoming. The plays he made, they really do leave speechless, because it's just like, dude, like, you're an athlete, and you're from Oregon, you're from Oregon, like, what? Like, he's different, he's wired different, but, I mean, me and him got that connection, because that's how we go out there and we try to attack the game. Like, that's my dog. Like, me and dude, we definitely always hanging out off the field and all that, and we got that connection. And you could kind of tell, like, as we continue to play with each other throughout the year, like, that confidence, like, that swag, you know what I mean? Like, that mob mentality playing on the defense, you know, it kind of regenerated throughout the whole defense. So, yeah, dudes, he's special. Yeah, I mean, we got the two best 22s in college football. Like,
yep, yep.
That's right.
The Daniel Green dudes, he's different. He's different.
And gotta ask you too. Gotta ask you, Reggie. We went to test the bonds a little bit. Prior, but the two best 22s in college football on K-State. What are you expecting? What are you expecting from that squad next year? I know you talk with the guys a lot. Obviously, you got high hopes and things that could be really good, but it's what should the fans look out for, and what do you expect to see from them in the fall?
What they should always look out for to win the Big 12 championship is contend for a national championship. That's how I felt. I felt that when before I even played in the game at K-State. Like, we got the team for it. They got Adrian Martinez coming in, whoever starts at quarterback. I trust all those guys. Our dudes, Malik Norris coming back, Phillip Brooks. The offensive line is always going to be solid, coached under Coach Riley. Especially with the injuries that they had last year on the defensive line. So all those guys coming back, you got Khalid Duke, who's one of the best defensive linemen in the nation. It's just, he got hurt last year. Then you got Felix, who's already up there. Eli Huggins, like, the linebackers are good with Deuce coming back. And the transfer kid from Maryland, I got that future.
Ooh, he's really good.
You got two of the best corners coming back in the nation, too. Like, people sleep on Echo Park, but he shuts people down. Like, he shuts down teams. And then Julius Brents is just special. Like, he's going to go out there and do what he does. You can't even create him in the lab. It doesn't make no sense how special he is. And then the safeties back there, Clemens is going to get them all right. So, they got a couple of transfers coming in, but they're all special, too. So, exactly what I said, because our special team is going to be our special teams always. That's history. Like, special teams playing bad. That's not even heard of at K-State. I'm not worried about that.
Nope.
Yeah, it's not even heard of at K-State, truthfully speaking. So I expect them to go out there, be undefeated, win the Big 12, and be ready for the national championship. I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise to me. Like, I know how hard they work. I know the type of work that they're putting in, how focused they are, how prepared they will be. They just got to go out there, play with confidence, and go out there and make plays.
Tell you what, really about the defense. That defense is looking real good. Eddie and I talked about it. We've talked about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that defense, honestly, both sides of the ball have me really excited. But the defense in particular, you mentioned it, getting Billy Duke healthy, having Felix on the other side, Eli Huggins coming back. Like, you can't ask for much of a better front than that. Mm-hmm. And then at the linebacking core, you mentioned it. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Every level, I feel like K-State's got really good top line talent and depth, really at every level of that defense, and it's I think it's really exciting to see.
Yeah, and the scheme fits too. I mean, Coach Klein, he's gonna call some plays now.
That's what they should definitely look out for.
Coach, I definitely want to ask about Coach Klein, too. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that was a big talking point. And K-State players, they seem real excited about that, especially some of these possible spread concepts that they've talked a little bit about in implementing.
Yeah, I don't want to speak too much on exactly what all they're doing, because they got some special things coming, but...
Yeah, don't do it,
Yeah, please don't get us in trouble for
saying
it should be fun.
Yeah, ain't gonna be that. You might lose my break some bridges, burn some bridges. That's right. Do that. Now you're gonna be there for 3 months. So, but now
I don't want you to burn the bridge.
And then they brought in a great receiver coach too, and Coach Ward. I actually got to meet him too when I was up my pro day. I mean, it's special. Those guys are playing with confidence. I got to watch a couple practices. They all special, man. It's the offense. Coach Klein, man, he loves K-State. He puts his all into it. I mean, just like he played when he was playing at K-State. So, just know he's going all out. And, yeah, he's trying to win, which is what he did when he played here. So, it's going to be exciting.
Reggie Stubblefield here on the Purple Project Podcast, episode 93 continues. Here as Reggie takes time out of his busy schedule to visit with us here. Just a few more questions with him on this edition. Obviously, Reggie, you mentioned earlier in the top that you're best friends with Julius Brents. You were with, obviously, Rush Yeast, Ross Elder, TJ Smith, Echo Boydo, Justin Gardner, Jerome McPherson. Who would you say was the most competitive out of all y'all in the secondary?
All of them. Outside football, like, better be competitive or you're going to get left. Everybody was competitive. Everybody brought a different type of talent and skill every day. Like, and it showed, though, too, because I think we were the only Big 12 team to have all our DBs make our conference. You know what I mean? We had 6 DBs make our conference. A lot of people forget that. Like, pretty crazy once you look back at it. So, everybody, man, can't just single like, nah. It's the truth. Everybody, man.
I believe it.
That's what you want to hear. That's exactly what you want to hear.
That's the truth, though. Like I said, Pac and Julius was two of the best corners in the nation to me. And then you got Rusty's first team all Big 12. Jerome was multiple all Big 12 conferences since he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got honorable mention last year, too. I got honorable mention. Ross was definitely one of the most improved ones. Now, if you look at his PFF grade, he was one of the top safeties in the Big 12. People forget that. You guys have to watch him and pay attention. Like, Ross is a playmaker. Like, Ross was cold, so. Boss Elder, then everybody know about TJ the Wasp. You got a secondary with 6 dudes getting all conference. That's crazy. That's unheard of.
That is pretty crazy. Yeah.
And you gotta pay attention to the details. It's all in the details. So our secondary was super competitive. Like when I got there, I was like, oof, I don't know where I'm gonna play it, but I'm gonna play. That's just how that's how it should be, man. That goes back credit to Coach Klein and his staff. Like, gotta bring in people who are gonna compete and people who wanna work every day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And my other question to you, Reggie, how did you get the nickname Sauce Boss?
Man, what's so crazy is I ain't heard it going around throughout the season. And I think it was a podcast, a fan. I'm not sure who said it. But when they said it, I mean, I wasn't paying attention to it. It was actually brought up to me from one of my friends. If we was hanging out one day, they was cooking for him at the house and stuff like that. And they was like, hey, bro, they really calling you the Sauce Boss. Like, okay, whatever. They was like, bro, we got a nickname. But that same week, we played West Virginia, I think. And I think the K-State football Twitter page had, you know, labeled Sauce Boss. I'm like, okay, this is for real. Like, so the Sauce Boss, I'm like, hey, let's go. I guess I'll hook it up. All right, let's get it. But yeah, that's kind of where it came from. I think it was a fan, though. I think it was a fan. I just don't know the name or the page of them, but it definitely came from one of them.
Well, I know one of your favorite fans on Twitter. I believe his name's Robert. He sure loved you a lot. Tweeted a lot at you, and I don't know if he was the crafter of the sauce boss, but he sure ran with it, and it was really cool to hear on your senior day when Mitch was doing the PA there. He really, you know, gave the fans the opportunity to shout sauce boss when you were coming out on your senior day. That was a really cool moment too, and clearly showed how much that nickname sticked.
Yeah. It shocked me because I didn't think people was going to actually shout it. They shouted it, and it was it was appreciative, man. Appreciate everybody. Like, that's what y'all, you know, want to credit me, call me, you know, because it's just a respect thing, and y'all appreciative, hey, go ahead. I ain't got no problems with it. So, I love it, though.
There's definitely a nickname that's stuck. There's no doubt about it. You know, for me, really, just my final question, Reggie, and I'll let kind of Eddie take it from there. But you know, what is you have conveyed messages to K-State Nation on your time there, and you put out an amazing note after that LSU game that was heartfelt. You know, just thanking everybody for their time. But what is the message? You know, what is the message that you want to? If you want to give to K-State Nation, it can be whatever you want, you know, but like, if there's just anything you want K-State Nation to know, what's a message that you may have, you may want to have for them?
Yeah, I just tell people all the time, man, thank you, man, really changed my life, gave me great opportunities to showcase who I am as a person on and off the field. I can't be appreciative enough. I mean, honestly, I don't know how many more words I can say just to show y'all my appreciation, because and it's out of this roof. But just to continue, you know, to embrace the program, you know, help everybody, treat everybody with love and respect. But, you know, those players are watching, those coaches are watching, they pay attention to those things. So just, you know, continue to do it the right way, you know, the faithful way, the godly way. So it's not enough I can say, man. Honestly, it's unbelievable. Like, I appreciate everything because K-State already does it at a top-notch level in the right way. So I'm just thankful.
Awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. Obviously, your time here was memorable. This is kind of a off-the-field question here for you. What was your favorite place to eat here in Manhattan? I know there's obviously a lot of places that are pretty good, but if there was one or two, what was your favorite spot? How
do
you eat?
Man, I'm a cooking guy. Like, I cook all the time.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it was football season, so our schedule was already busy. Didn't have too much time to go, you know, out to eat and all that. But I did catch a couple things during fall camp. Yeah, I did appreciate Umi's. The hibachi place is pretty good. Pretty
good. Oh, yeah.
You can't beat hibachi. I mean, about you, that's just what it is. So that was really good. But I think one of those Aggieville places, I appreciated it. Yeah, DP though, just because they stayed open super late. Yeah, super late. DP though was convenient. And then I liked the Insomnia Cookie Place. That was pretty good too. So, I haven't been to too many restaurants though. That's the thing too. I still need to show my face around and kind of get to. I didn't have too many opportunities, so I need to actually see these restaurants everybody be talking about. Because I haven't had Taco Lucha or all these things people talk about. So I need to.
Taco Lucha is awesome. You're right. Taco Lucha. Taco Lucha.
Yes, Taco Lucha. It's been a while since I've been there, but it's really good. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Denzel Goolsbee. I don't know if you've heard of Denzel Goolsbee.
I have a lot of good things about him.
Okay, so he opened his restaurant, Goolsbee's. He opened Goolsbee's there at the Blue Mont Hotel, where it's like beer on tap. You can pour your own beer on the wall. You can go play all these interactive sports and things like that. Did he open that after you left, or was that open when you were there?
It was actually, first of all, I heard a lot of great things about Goolsbee. say his last name wrong. I got a lot of respect for him because what he did to Kansas City. I was actually, my pro dad was actually staying in like the Hilton Hotel right across from me. And it was open. I just never went. Like, I just didn't go nowhere. Like, I was football 20% when I was at K-State. Like, man, I had me a small little dorm. I wasn't worried about nothing else. But,
yeah,
I definitely need to because it definitely looked good. I'm like, dang, he just played football and he got this restaurant?
I know.
Yeah.
I told my parents they're going to Manhattan this weekend for a wedding, and they're actually staying at the Blue Mont. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, I just blew your cover where you're staying. But I told them, I said, try Goldsby's and let me know how it is, because I'm very intrigued ever since he opened that place up.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I was very impressed with it, man. I definitely got to check it out. You know, shout out to him. But
yeah, Eddie, you need to go over there. You need to go over there and give Goldsby's a ticket for a drive.
Yeah, I still need to go over there and try that place out. Yeah, I have not tried it out yet, but I've heard some really good things, some really good reviews. So that I need to put that on the list of things to do still here in Manhattan while I'm still here. Oh, yeah, man. Final question, and we will let you go. Reggie, I know you're obviously from what you talked to us about here tonight on this podcast. You're a hardworking dude. You get things done. You have goals to set. I started off with an NFL question. I'm gonna end it with an NFL draft question here. What are your goals? Moving forward, obviously, you have your eyes on the NFL draft here coming up next month, actually. So you got that going on. So what are your goals? What do you want to achieve next in your football career?
Yeah, so I have a list of goals because I take everything, like, strategically and, you know, as a process because, you know, you got to take those baby steps or whatever. But, you know, just the big goals, I definitely want to be one of the best defensive players in the NFL. Obviously, you know, every kid's dream is to get drafted, but definitely getting drafted, making the team. Once I make the team, like I said, run with it and just become one of the best defensive players in the NFL. My first year there, you know, making all pro, making the Super Bowl, making the Pro Bowl, and just, you know, I got big dreams, man. I got big goals, so I'm working hard to reach them. And that's what I want to do.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, I'll tell you what, too. First off, I will keep an eye out for when you open Stubblefields, and I'll be ready to eat that food that you've been talking about on this podcast. That's the first thing. Second thing, my Chiefs are desperate for a cornerback right now, / safety, anything in the backfield. So, you know what? If you end up a Chief, sign me up for that. I am here for that. But no, Reggie, I thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate having you. It was an amazing conversation. I know K-State fans will love to hear all of those insights, and it was a blast having you.
Yeah, man, it's a blessing to be on here, man. Appreciate it. Anytime, like I said, man, I appreciate y'all for giving me the opportunity. So anytime I got more time, free time on my hand, we can do this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Reggie, awesome. I'm glad you responded very quickly. I was a little surprised, but definitely, we'll have to we have more time, definitely talk a little more. But Sauce Boss, it's been awesome having you on. Alex, stay on the line. We'll finish up with a Chiefs question. That was a good transition. But Reggie.
Oh, thank you.
Reggie, thank you so much.
Hey, thank y'all, guys.
Thanks, Reg.
Oh, man. Alex, Sauce Boss.
You couldn't let me out without getting into the Chiefs, could you, Eddie?
You cannot escape. You cannot escape.
Not so fast. I'm trying to slide out the back door, and Eddie's like, no.
Yeah. I
thank you, Alex.
Yeah, I know. I got dinner. I already told my wife I'll be late to dinner. Well, so real quick,
no,
obviously.
I don't believe you. I'm here to talk to you, and they're clearly in the news right now.
Yep. Reggie Stubblefield, K-State Nation, on the Purple Project Podcast, 8-5 K-State Wildcats, Texas Bowl champs, knocking off LSU 42-20 a couple of months ago. So you couldn't let me escape the Falcons, so payback for that. So, but seriously, though, we'll end it on this. Obviously, Chiefs. Tyreek Hill going to the Dolphins for several draft picks. Yeah, five. What are your thoughts on Tyreek moving on?
Oh, boy. Eddie. So, I'll take you a quick ride through my day yesterday. So, you all know this. I live in San Diego, so I'm West Coast, okay? So, I'm already starting from behind when I wake up because I'm 2 hours earlier here. So, you know, I wake up. I've got the ESPN alert saying that, you know, the Tyreek would be looking to get traded. And I'm like, what in the hell's cow? Like, they were just about to reach a deal 10 days ago. Everyone was saying that it practically had a verbal agreement in place and that it was just about signing the contract. And I'm like, how on earth? And then I thought, I'm going to fly out to Las Vegas myself and go strangle the Raiders for paying Devontae Adams $28 million a year. I'm going to do it myself because that screwed everything up. And you know what, Eddie? It moved so quickly yesterday. I could not focus at work at all because that moved so quickly, so fast. And next thing you know, in 3 hours, Tyreek's gone. And they've traded him for five draft picks. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. How in the hell did that happen? And it sucked, man. It freaking sucked. I don't know how else to say it. Coming off of that, all the emotion of that, and being able to come to be more using the head, not the heart, I think the Chiefs did absolutely the right thing, and they did the best that they could in a bad situation. There was no way that they could pay a wide receiver $30 million a year when you're paying a quarterback $45 million a year. And just, you can't do that. That is not fiscally responsible. That's not the right thing to do. And, you know, they could have kept Tyreek. He had another year on this contract. They could have also franchised tagged him, so they really had a couple years of control over him. But there's no reason to keep someone who doesn't want to be there and keep in a toxic situation, put him in a toxic situation and put your locker, you know, risk having a toxic locker room and things like that. So, you know, I think the Chiefs did the right thing on, you know, granting Tyreek Hill the trade when he realized that the Chiefs weren't going to be giving him that type of money. And look, for the trade, at first glance, it seems kind of underwhelming to me, but you look back and it was a lot more than the Packers got for Devontae Adams. It was five draft picks, and now the Chiefs are sitting in a position anywhere. They've got 12 draft picks this year. 12! Insane. They've got 12 draft picks this year. They've got two in the first, two in the second, two in the third, two in the fourth, and they got like six picks in the top 100. And so they just got tons of draft picks. They got two more draft picks in 2023 as well. And they've got more salary cap space than any team in the NFL. So they've got a ton of base. They got a ton of money all of a sudden, a ton of draft picks. And they pretty much kind of have free will to do what they want. And kind of now it's going to be easier for them, Eddie, to kind of address that defense and be able to draft more players that can help that defense immediately, go spend on some free agents that they may not have been able to afford otherwise. I've seen them link this to Stephon Gilmore, possibly seeing if they can get him at their corner spot. And then it also gives them the ability, Eddie, to be really aggressive in free agency the next 2 years. And they simply would not have been able to do that. So while the Chiefs are going to be worse this year, I don't think there's any denying that. I think you're kind of living in denial if you don't think that they're going to be maybe a little bit of a drop-off. Despite that, I still think they've got a top-10 offense. I would argue that it'll probably end up being a top-5 offense again once the Chiefs are done. They signed Marquez Valdes-Scantling from the Packers today.
I saw that. Mm-hmm.
They're going to draft a receiver early. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They've already got Juju, who they signed. They got McCole Hardman. They still got Travis Kelce. And they got Clyde Edwards-Helaire there in the back. They got one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. And they had Ronald Jones in, the former Buccaneers running back for yesterday, and they're considering signing him and pairing him with Clyde. So the offense is still going to be really good, and they're going to be able to make that defense better than I think they would have been able to if they did sign Tyreek and didn't have enough money or draft.
It sucks. I hate it. It's the end of an era. Ideally, I wish that they could have made it work with Tyreek. But long term, I think that the Chiefs will be fine. You know, they're definitely not going through a rebuild or anything like that. They're just kind of going through a reset. And they, look, Eddie, they're still one of the favorites to win the AFC, even after that. Vegas didn't move the odds. Vegas kept their odds the same. They're still the favorites to win the West. They're still, I think, second favorite to win the AFC behind the Bills. Personally, I think the team they have right now, I don't know, it's a little iffy for me. I don't think I would pick them to win the West right now, the way they're currently constructed. But I think by the time the offseason is over, the way the Chiefs look, I have a feeling they'll be back and they'll be back ahead and have a slight edge over one of those teams just because they've got a ton of draft picks, so they're going to be able to load up on young talent, young Chief talent. And I also think they're going to make a big trade. They've got a lot of money and a lot of picks. And Brett Veach is an aggressive general manager, so I don't know what he's got up his sleeve. He's not going to use all 12 of those picks. I think he's going to make a big trade, and the Chiefs are going to land someone who we're not thinking about right now. And that could catapult them right back up to being the favorites in the AFC. So, it sucks, but, you know, you got 12 draft picks this year. You've got, like, 10 draft picks the next year. You've got over $70 million in money sitting there now. And, all of a sudden you've got some options available that you didn't think you were going to have. So that's kind of the blessing in disguise, and we'll see what they do with it. So it sucks, but I'm kind of excited to see what Mahomes does post Tyreek. And to kind of see what the Chiefs do and kind of how they kind of reset things here.
Yeah, definitely will be interesting. As I mentioned to Reggie, the NFL draft come up next month, and all those picks that you guys got.
That's insane, man. That's insane. 12 picks.
Yeah, 12 picks. My goodness. Wow. Alex, we knocked this one out of the park yet again. Purple Project Podcast. Episode 93 will come out before the weekend tomorrow night at some point. Definitely, K-State Nation will look forward to this one as well. So, I was going to say something else, a big day, obviously, for K-State. We'll end on this. Jerome Tang finally introduced as K-State's 25th head coach of men's basketball. Really, really excited to see the direction that Coach Tang can take this team. Obviously, he's got some work to do. Still hiring his coaches, and I don't know at the moment if he's going to keep Shane Southwell. We already talked about this, me and you, or not. I mean, he's pretty big. He's pretty big. So we'll know, follow that story a lot. But, yep, he's got some work to do, but definitely very excited to have him on board, K-State Nation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And I think what's great is that these players seem, I know a handful of the beat guys were able to talk with the players after the press conference there, or the introductory press conference, and they all seem pumped up. They all seem really pumped up. They talked to Nigel Pack, which will probably make a handful of K-State fans feel a little bit better. And Nigel Pack was really excited. He said, we're going to be an NCAA tournament team next year. We'll be playing this time next year. And I thought, okay, I like that, Nigel. by the way, Nigel did also say, he did confirm what you and I said a couple nights ago on the podcast, that he's going to get evaluated. He's going to the draft to be evaluated and try to get better, because his end goal is to play in the NBA, because that's always your dream when you play. So it sounded to me what Nigel said, that he's not seriously considering it. It is more of just trying to get an evaluation and trying to learn so he can get better. And that was kind of what I expected. But he was also talking about the team next year and what they could do and accomplish. But we will see. But either way, super excited. You mentioned the coaching staff. I'm really excited about the coaching staff that Jerome Tang is building. Will Shane South will be on that staff to be determined. But there are a couple of guys who have been announced. Like I mentioned, the assistant with Texas, being able to get him, the assistant with Akron, well. A couple really, really good assistants, especially the assistant with Texas, being able to snag him was huge, We shall see if Shane is on that staff. I don't know what will happen with him, but I would not be shocked to see him end up on that staff in some way, shape, or form. So we'll see, but I'm just excited, Eddie. I wish we could lace up play basketball here in a month, and I cannot. we got to wait so long, because Drum King has me fired up. I think I said it a couple days ago. I'm ready to go and roll again, man. Let's go. Like, I saw Skylar Thompson today. He said, you know what, I'm going to get another year of eligibility so I can play ball for him. Like, I'm telling you, man, he's getting the juices going. He's getting people fired up. And you know what, I am not here to hate on Bruce Weber at all. Because I made it clear that while it's time for a change, I was really grateful for what he did.
Right, yeah.
But part of the reason that there was a little disconnect between him and the fans is because, you know, Bruce was a little defensive against the fans. And, you know, in his closing press conference, he, you know, kind of, you know, talked about the fan base and how it could be a little bit toxic. And sometimes he was flooding the fans, but it wasn't an endorsement on the fans, we'll say that. And then Drum King comes in, the first thing he talks about is, I took the job because of the fans and how much he loves the fans. So it was just a complete contrast of messaging from Bruce Weber to Drum King. And I think that was really a welcomed, kind of some welcomed words for K-State fans Bruce said going out the door. So
yeah.
I think they're excited about that too, and I'm excited to see what he does.
Yeah, definitely a much-needed fresh air. definitely that's kind of the transitioning part of coaches. You know, Bruce Weber held it in his feelings, and he let him out. He let him out after that West Virginia game. Yes. Sour taste in Purple Nation, K-State, a.k.a. Purple Nation's hearts there. And Coach Jerome Tang brings in that fresh excitement and fires the fan base right back up. So definitely much needed. I'm pretty pumped up about it as well. I'm gonna go back actually here and watch the rest of the press conference earlier. The introduction press conference from today. Very excited, and we'll see what happens from there, folks. K-State Nation. Triple P Weekly, 93 in the books. Alex, we are getting closer and closer to the 100th episode of this podcast. A lot going on for K-State this weekend. We will get back together, obviously, next week. But we knocked out another special guest interview.
Yeah, man. Like I said, it was great. It was great having Reggie on. Man, he shared some great insights that I think the fans are going to love to hear. And, you know, another great guest, another great episode. And look forward to doing it again. And in the meantime, buckle up. We've got another weekend of March Madness, which is actually already kicked off. It looks like Arkansas is up 4 with 36 seconds left against Gonzaga. And Villanova's only up 4 on Michigan with 3 minutes left. We got some games. And Tech and Duke play tonight. Buckle up, man. We got some ball to watch.
Yeah, we got some ball.
I'm looking forward to it. So we'll watch some March Madness. That's probably what I'm going to do after this. But it was great, and he was great as always.
Yep, definitely. Yep. I forgot about the Sweet 16 starting tonight. Oh, good. Thank you for the reminder.
It kind of snuck up on us. It's already Thursday, believe it or not.
It's already Thursday. Knocked out 2 episodes of the Pro Project Podcast, and I'm going to buckle up and enjoy some more basketball. Definitely the NCAA Final Four teams will be decided this weekend. That's a good transition to wrap this up. I'm going to
lose. What? Oh my gosh, I had it winning it all. Crazy. Mind's blown right now. Okay. Okay, Arkansas, I see you. Wow.
Unbelievable. So there you go, folks. More madness to come this weekend. For Alex Aiden, my co-host, Eddie Greer, here in Manhattan, Kansas, Alex, San Diego, California. This has been another edition of the Pearl Project Podcast. Appreciate you guys for listening again, hopping on board to this latest K-State podcast. We will talk to you guys next week, and go Cats! We'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back.
Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.